Welcome to Ancient Future Faith with Dr. Chris Alford, pastor of Epiclesis, an ancient future faith community in Sacramento. Just what is ancient future Christian faith? Join Chris each week as he talks with special guests about a refreshing renewal in evangelical worship and spirituality that's helping many believers get in touch with their ancient Christian heritage. Now, with another look at how the road to the evangelical future runs through the ancient past, here's Dr. Chris Alford.
Well, hi there, folks, and welcome to another edition of Ancient Future Faith. My name is Chris Alford. I'm the pastor of Epiclesis, an ancient future faith community right here in Sacramento, California, and the host of this program, heard weekly on KFIA Radio, called Ancient Future Faith. Our task is to try to help answer, at least in part, what in the world ancient future Christian faith is. A very special guest today. His name is Steve Scott. He's an artist. He is a poet. He is a wordsmith. And he is on the cutting edge of arts and Christian worship and redeeming them for Christian worship. Steve Scott, welcome. I'm so glad you're here today.
Thank you. Yes, hello.
You know, I don't think I even would have enough time in this entire broadcast to list all of your accomplishments and the things that you are involved in. But I would love for you to just tell the listeners, if you would, a little bit about you and sort of give us the highlights of what we need to know about you in reference to the conversation we're going to have today.
I'm British. I come from Northeast London. I've lived in California since the late 1970s. I went to art school in England in the late 1960s through to the mid-1970s, approximately around the time that I was first taking Christianity as a faith very seriously.
What was your discipline in the arts, by the way?
Well, that's a tough question. I started in visual arts. So I was painting, but I was at art school during a time when a lot of experimentation was encouraged in different media. Mm-hmm. Or no media, that you went into the realm of just ideas and concepts and performance and things like that. Those were the factors that were emerging in the art school scene when I was an art student. They were pop art, the early sort of very proto, what would be called postmodern approaches to the arts were emerging in the 60s and the 70s. And I was in the middle of all that when I went to art school. I was a very young art student, a very young Christian in my formative years as a Christian. And trying to make sense of my cultural experiences in art school at a very tumultuous time, Summer of Love in the late 1960s through to the sort of the punk rock pushback in the mid-1970s. Those two events bookended my art school experience and my formative years as a believer. And then I, because of some people that I met, Randy Stonehill and Larry Norman, who were living in the town next to where I was at art school, just outside of London, they were like renting a house there for a little while. I ran into them in the early 1970s.
Tell everyone who they are, just in case they don't.
Larry Norman is identified as the architect of what's called Jesus Rock that morphed into what is more currently known as CCM, or Contemporary Christian Music, today. So he was kind of the man, the myth, the legend, legendary singer-songwriter, performer, rock musician who was part of that first wave of what was called Jesus Rock, that was part of the Jesus movement. And Randy Stonehill was a singer, songwriter, rock musician, also working with Larry at that time, ended up being part of Larry's record label, Solid Rock Records. Anyway, I met these guys, and they heard some of my songs and music, and they said, well, why don't you consider coming to Southern California and making a record? So I did. Once I'd finished art school, I left England and moved to Southern California, ostensibly to record a record for Larry Norman's new record label. And I did most of that, and the project never got finished. And in the course of recording that, Randy Stonehill came to Northern California to perform a concert for a church called Warehouse Christian Ministries, pastored by Lewis Neely and his wife, Mary Neely. And so I came up with Randy and began to talk with Mary and Lewis Neely about Warehouse Ministries' interest in the arts as part of the expression of the church in their attempts to reach out into the counterculture, and also in their worship and their desire for excellence in the arts.
And you said this was the late 70s.
Yes, the late 1970s. So when things began to bog down or unravel a little bit in Southern California, we began to talk about moving to Northern California. So I moved up to Northern California, Sacramento, and got involved with Warehouse Christian Ministries.
I'm going to assume that at the time, there just wasn't a lot of thinking being done anywhere about how the arts intersect with the Christian experience or telling God's story, that kind of thing. Is that the case?
In different places, there were different temperatures, as it were, around that conversation. What I mean by that is what I'd left in England was a somewhat vibrant exploratory group called the London Arts Centre Group that had been put together by a number of people, but it was ostensibly started and chaired and hosted by Nigel Goodwin and his wife Jilly in a number of different locations. The Arts Centre Group is still going strong.
Wow.
They opened up their apartment or flat, and it was gathering of that first earlier generations of artists and thinkers, media workers, a number of people who had been out to Le Brie with Francis Schaeffer, and a number of people who were either familiar with or becoming familiar with the art criticism of people like Professor Hans Rugmacher out of the Netherlands. And so Rugmacher published a book through InterVarsity Press in 1970 called Modern Art and Death of a Culture. That became a talking point. He came and lectured at the Royal College of Art in 1973.
In London.
In London, yeah. And I went and saw him give his talk. And the idea of the Arts Centre Group was and is basically encouragement, hard thinking, processing the relationship between one's faith and one's engagement with culture. And a number of astonishing people were part of that first group and are still involved at some level with the group as it develops, or have gone off to do other things. People like poet journalist Steve Turner, who, when I first met him, come I think from somewhere else in England, he'd moved to London, going to be a poet. He was a poet, got published, began to do rock journalism, interviewed people like Eric Clapton, wrote biographies of people like Marvin Gaye, Johnny Cash, and has written books such as Imagine. I think the subtitle is A Christian Vision for the Arts. He's done a book on cultural engagement called Pop Cultured. So there's Steve Turner, who I've known since the early 1970s, who was part of the Arts Centre group conversation and came out and has been doing cultural engagement at a number of different levels over the last 30 years.
So you come to Northern California, steeped in that experience and that understanding. That sounds like a wonderful place to have been and to be steeped in that conversation. And did you find that there was a different conversation here or less of a conversation? Or what did you find when you came to Northern California?
I found a different conversation. I found a different conversation because some people, if they wanted to think about the arts at all, viewed it in very pragmatic, utilitarian communication terms.
Okay, you know? So you arrive on the scene here in Northern California. And when it comes to Christians and the arts, your experience was that many people seem to approach art, if at all, in a utilitarian sense. What can we communicate directly with this? How can it be useful to us? Am I saying that right?
Absolutely. I think that's true. I'm not describing any particular group of people because we were all in a learning process about how to translate the best of the conversations that I'd had into the best of the learning that other people were undergoing, and I was growing and learning myself. I'd like to, if I may describe it in this way. There are, in my experience, three streams of Christian thinking and engagement with the arts.
Okay.
And what I mean is, when I talk about Hans Rugmacher and Francis Schaeffer, and ultimately the influence of people like Abraham Kuyper, who talked and wrote about the cultural mandate the early human family was given, I'm talking about that stream of cultural engagement that comes out of the Reformed confessional tradition.
So from the Reformation?
Yeah, well, the Calvinist, Dutch Reformed. So a number of people who have thought about the church's engagement with culture and what the artist who is a Christian does in the light of God's providence and in the light of God's goodness with the gift that God has given them.
Okay, so that's one of the three
streams. That's one perspective that I ran into.
Okay.
Another perspective that I ran into in my talking with people in more of a missions and missional engagement, they were looking for ways of using the arts, both near and far, in terms of communicating across context or into the context of the hearer, whether you're dealing with the Navajo or the Tibetan or the Eskimo, the Balinese, the Indian, the Indonesian, the Filipino, looking for the ways in which the arts are a heartbeat of that particular culture and ways of speaking into that culture through what you can learn about their own art forms. First one, art as mandate in the Reformed tradition.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, art as part of a missional strategy.
Okay.
In the second tradition and in the third tradition, the more, I guess, ancient future would step in here, the more conciliar tradition where people understand the role of the arts in the affective life of the church as part of worship, liturgy, the way they think about the sacraments, the value that liturgy brings or liturgical expression brings to the worship experience of the church. And because the church worships in an enriched way, it thinks more clearly about its faith and expresses its faith more deeply. So traditionally, I would be looking at, you know, writers in the Anglo-Catholic or the Roman Catholic tradition or the Eastern Orthodox tradition from that. But I'm happy to see that evangelical and ancient future are coming together to explore that reality.
Were all three of these streams flowing at the same time?
Or? All three of these streams were flowing at the same time and, in my opinion, talking past each other.
Ah, I see.
The people who wanted just to see good art for the glory of God were suspicious of the artists as evangelists. The artists as evangelists were suspicious of those that didn't want to do anything communicative with the arts, and they were equally suspicious of the more liturgically grounded traditions because they may or may not have suspected that they weren't really saved or something like that.
I see.
In my experience, in my opinion, there are mutual conversations going on and they were talking past each other. And in my opinion, they used to be talking to each other.
Yeah. Folks, you're listening to an interview, a wonderful conversation with Steve Scott. He's an artist, he's a musician, he's a theologian, a poet, a writer, and his task is a wonderful one, and that is helping us as believers think about the arts and how we are creative people, how the arts should be integrated into our whole lives, how we use the arts to communicate God's big story. Steve, you were talking about these three streams of conversation about the arts. When you came to Northern California, what was the task that you began to do? What is it that you were doing day to day with Warehouse Ministries?
Well, I was learning an awful lot, and I came here ostensibly to do with the arts because the church had expressed an interest and a desire to make use of the arts as part of that church's expression and engagement with the culture around it.
And when they said arts, what did they mean?
Everything. They had painters, sculptors, dancers. They did theater. They had rock bands that did concerts there. Things developed into, first of all, Sangre Productions, which was a multifaceted and multimedia approach to the arts. And then there was Exit Records with Charlie Peacock and Vector and the 77s and groups and musicians like that. And I was on that record label for a while. During the Exit Records phase of what they were doing, it was very much about an alternative record label, the bands playing and touring in America and in Europe and putting out albums and records. Then once the Exit phase was over, a more generalized, an enhanced and an increased and a deepened learning and understanding of the arts. But for me personally, I was also being drawn into more of an associate staff position there, mm-hmm. which meant counseling, it meant Bible study teaching, and doing those kinds of things.
By the way, what was the denominational context of, if any, of the Warehouse Ministry?
Warehouse Ministries was started by, as I say, Lewis and Mary Neely. Right. They were originally involved in missionary activity for the Assemblies of God.
Mm-hmm.
When they began Warehouse Christian Ministries, they found themselves in a situation where they sought closer affiliation with the Calvary Chapel movement out of Southern California.
Mm-hmm. And so you left Warehouse Ministries at some point, and then I do want to make the transition to the work that you're doing now with an organization called Cana. So you're still in the Sacramento area, and somehow or other, you get hooked up with an organization called Cana. Tell us what in the world that is, how did that come about, and what is it that is animating and inspiring you now as you lead Cana?
Sure. Okay. Well, CANA is an acronym for Christian Artists Networking Association.
So C-A-N-A.
C-A-N-A. I got involved with CANA because I was working at Warehouse Christian Ministries. Mm-hmm. And we were exploring the arts. I got sent to do things, or I got invited to go do things in other places as a result of one trip to Southern California to teach for an organization called FACE, Fellowship of Artists in Cultural Exchange. They were running a summer school in art and mission, and I went down to Pasadena to their campus for a week of their arts and missions school. And this was in 1986. Mm-hmm. And they mentioned to me, the founders of FACE, Gene and Mary Lou Totten, that two career missionaries in India, Bruce and Kathleen Nichols, missionary theologians in India, had announced the starting of the traditional media unit of the International Christian Media Commission.
Oh, that's a mouthful.
Yeah, they announced this at a Christian Missions and Media Conference in the Netherlands. And the TMU was basically a networking under Bruce and Kathleen Nichols. They knew all these artists in Asia and Africa and the Philippines, Europe, Eastern Europe. And they wanted to start pulling together all these artists via a newsletter and via regular conferences to reflect on art, theology, mission, in a majority world context, on pretty much the kind of the dynamic edge of what was happening missionally, but with artists and artisans from all over coming together and reflecting on theology and the arts from kind of these somewhat dynamic emerging contexts. So this was described to me, incidentally, while I was down in Pasadena, and I got connected to Bruce and Kathleen Nichols, and I ended up going to their first conference on the island of Bali in 1989, in which all these artists came together, and we looked at each other's work, and we discussed art, mission, and theology, and creativity in a emerging economy, majority world perspective. And I stayed in touch with the organization. Then they did a conference again in Bali in 94, then in Eastern Europe in 99. And all the time I was getting drawn deeper and deeper into the conversation, so that by 2002, when we did a conference in Chiang Mai, northern Thailand, I was asked to consider becoming involved in the leadership structure of the organization, which I did.
All right.
So kind of took it over. And these conferences were usually hosted by an organization that was already like on the job, doing it cutting edge. And we would go there, whether it be the Protestant Church of Bali or the Evangelical Theological Seminary in Croatia or Payap University and the Institute of Christian Communication in Chiang Mai, Thailand. They would host, they would help arrange the conference, and we'd go there, see what they were doing, plus we'd share all the work and biblical reflections and worship together. And so I took over in 2002, changed the name from TMU to CANA. Christian Artists Networking Association.
Okay.
But it's also the village where Jesus turned water into wine.
That's right.
And we did a conference at Chiang Mai in 2002. We had artists from the Philippines, from Africa, India, Indonesia, Europe, New Zealand come together, share, reflect together.
What an enviable position you're in. You, by virtue of heading up CANA, are in touch with creative Christians. And to some degree, we are all creative Christians, right? We've been made in the image of a creative creator God. But you're in contact with artists and poets and writers who are Christian all over the world.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes, I am. And they're, in my opinion, they are on the cutting edge of describing where the church goes next. They're doing a practical theology of communication and expression in context, which is what God wants, basically.
So as you are talking to these creative types all over the world, what are you hearing? What are they saying out there? What's the Spirit saying? And how is a revitalization and reimagining of the arts in Christian worship working itself out around the globe? What's going on out there?
Well, I'm trying to get the big picture myself. The trends that I sense and I want to encourage are that people are looking for their own voice or the voice in their own culture with which to express genuine worship to the true God in creative ways. In the general art world, there's been a kind of a dynamic flattening of the world. There's much more of a level playing field. Communications technology has shifted, as it were, the interest of the arts and art history and the development of art history, modern art and postmodernism even, away from a sort of a European base, mm-hmm. out to a more sort of distributed and dispersed multi-center. There are art fairs all over the world. There are new cultural centers springing up.
And one of them happens to be where you're going to be headed later this summer. In our remaining moments, tell us just a little bit. You've got a conference coming up.
Yes, I do.
Tell us a little bit about where it is, what do you anticipate happening there, and how we can be praying for you and supporting your efforts.
CANA is organizing a conference in Cambodia.
Wow.
The big conference will be in 2015. What I'm doing in about a week or so is going back to Cambodia to do some teaching on the arts and creativity with groups of people in Phnom Penh and other parts of Cambodia and other parts of Southeast Asia, the Philippines, if things stay stable there typhoon-wise. Just going and sharing my vision and hearing their vision for emerging art practices in the context of faith, mm-hmm. working with organizations like Cambodian Christian Arts Ministry. And we're going to do some teaching and some vision casting, as it were, mm-hmm. and create interest and shareholder buy-in from all whose hearts are willing, who wants to be involved in the 2015 conference. And I'm going to teach, share, learn, network, and meet with local infrastructure, people that can help me with the logistics and the administrative aspects of what's involved in making this conference happen.
Okay, folks, if you want to learn more information about CANA, Steve has an email to share with you. Steve, tell us what that is.
It's info.cana.arts, A-R-T-S, @gmail.com.
So info.cana.arts@gmail.com.
Yeah, the website's being redesigned right now. So,
okay.
But if you want to write to me in the short term, send me an email at that address with the words ancient future in the subject line so I'll know where the query came from.
Will you promise me that when you get back from Cambodia, you'll come back on the radio program again, let's talk about what you experienced, what you saw, and what's happening over there with regard to arts and Christian worship?
Absolutely. I'll gladly do that.
Steve Scott, it's wonderful to have you here today. I'm grateful. I'm honored to have you with us. Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you for this opportunity to speak and share.
Folks, you've been listening to an interview with Steve Scott. He is at the cutting edge of art and Christian worship. He's a thinker, a theologian, a musician, a poet, a writer, a teacher, and he has lots to tell us and to show us about the arts. What are you doing in the arts in your church out there, folks? We're all creative people created by a creative God to tell his big story, and there are a thousand colors and ways to tell God's big story. That's part of what it means to be ancient future, using the whole of our Christian experience and history to tell God's big story. Until we gather next time for another edition of Ancient Future Faith, I want you to remember that the road to our evangelical future surely does run through our ancient Christian past. The Lord be with you.
Thank you for joining us for another look at Ancient Future Faith. There is a refreshing wind of renewal blowing through the evangelical church as more and more worshipers turn for inspiration to the rich language and pattern of the ancient church. And they're rediscovering classic Christianity and learning to draw strength from a deep well of time-tested truth and tradition. Want to experience Ancient Future Faith for yourself? Join us for worship at Epiclesis in Sacramento on Sunday mornings at 10:30 a.m. in the chapel at 4600 Winding Way. You can contact us by calling 916-572-9113 or online at epiclesis.org. That's 916-572-9113 or on the web at epiclesis.org.
Hi folks, it's Pastor Chris with one more word before we sign off. The long season after Pentecost is the perfect time to experience worship at Epiclesis, or maybe jump into a small group. There's always something happening at Epiclesis, and we'd love to have you be a part of it. Think about joining us for worship this summer. You'll be warmly welcome. As always, find more information on the web at epiclesis.org. That's EPICLESIS.org. The Lord be with you, and see you next Saturday at 1 p.m. for another edition of Ancient Future Faith.